The Holy Gospel according to St. John, the 17th chapter. I ask not only on behalf of these, but also on behalf of those who will believe in me through their word, that they may all be one. As you, Father, are in me, and I am in you, may they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. The glory that you have given me, I have given them, so that they may be one as we are one, I in them and you in me, that they may become completely one, so that the world may know that you have sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me. Father, I desire that those also whom you have given me may be with me where I am, to see my glory, which you have given me because you loved me before the foundation of the world. Righteous Father, the world does not know you, but I know you, and these know that you have sent me. I have made your name known to them, and I will make it known, so that the love with which you have loved me may be in them, and I in them. The Gospel of the Lord. Come into my parlor, said the spider to the fly. But we have to ask the question, what's a parlor? Much as when my sister-in-law mentioned to my 9-year-old son the other day, she backed her minivan into the clothesline, my son goes, what is a clothesline? A parlor is that formal room that found its day in the Victorian era, normally right inside the front door. That was where the nice furniture was kept and was kept clean and was kept ready for company at all times, so that if someone would show up at the door unexpectedly, you would bring them into the parlor. They would not see the chaos of the rest of the house that existed beyond the doors of the parlor. Parlors also served a very important function in life passages in their day, and that when there was a death in the family that lived in that home, normally the person who had died would lie in state in the parlor, and family would come to visit, and they would gather in the parlor and express their condolences and offer their consolation. There came a time, however, when the person lying in state moved out of the home and into a more professional setting. Those early settings were called funeral parlors, and they served the same purpose that the parlor did in the home. And people would then gather at the funeral parlors, which we now call funeral homes, and would offer their respects and visit with the family. If you go to some more traditional funeral homes today, you will notice the decor in them, and many of them have a very Victorian feel to the way that they're designed to match that feeling of the parlor. When that rite of death was moved to the professional funeral parlors, people renamed that front sitting room. And so it wasn't the parlor where funerals took place, but became the living room. The counter, the notion of death in the room, the living room. And so now I think some people have living rooms as opposed to parlors. I was raised that way, where the front room, just inside the front door, was the living room, which was kept nice and clean, and my brother and I were not allowed to even play in there. I remember one time as a kid asking my mother, why do we call it the living room if we never live in there? And she said, because we have a family room. What I want to do today is to invite you to move with me from the family room to living room. And as we look at the image of Jesus coming to dwell among us, say that we live in him. And what does it mean that we live in Jesus. I want to do that in the context of an understanding of childhood, especially on this Mother's Day. I think when it comes to values related to parents and children, that those from the conservative Christian camp probably have values that are closer to faithful values than from other persuasions of Christianity. The problem is, I think that those values are ahistorical. That is, they don't ask the question how they came into being. And if something is ahistorical and we don't ask how something came into being, then it becomes more an issue of being authoritarian than understanding the purpose of the structure. That applies to the concept of childhood. The concept of childhood has not always existed the way we understand it now, where we see a parent separate from a child, and there is a distinction between the parental figure and the child, and the children go to school and are raised in successive levels until adulthood. It's Neil Postman in his book, The Disappearance of Childhood, who traces the history of how the concept of childhood as we know it came into being. And he traces it back to the time of the invention of the printing press. Is that prior to that, there was not as much of a distinction between children and adults. Children found themselves in the same places where adults found themselves. Children dressed the way adults dressed. Children spoke the way adults spoke. Children found themselves in the same kind of situations that adults found themselves. There was not the distinction between the two. But with the invention of the printing press and the need for people to have the capacity to read, what we find are adults who have the capacity to read, but we have children who don't have that ability, and so must be identified as a separate group and then educated in the basic linguistic skills of recognition of letters and learning to read and linear thought that comes out of that. When you identify that group for that purpose, you start to separate parent from child. Schools come into being for the purpose of educating the children. And there becomes a separation between adults and children. You will start to see in the decades after the invention of the printing press that children and parents started to dress differently. Schools started to come into being for the teaching of reading and other skills. You wouldn't find children in the same places you would find parents. Parents started to keep their children away from the situations that they believed their children weren't ready to experience. And as a result of that, we see what has evolved into a modern understanding of childhood, a difference between an adult and a child. And what Postman says that challenges us now is that as we have moved into an age where it's not as much about reading but about visual recognition through the television, that we are narrowing the gap once again between adults and children, because you don't need special skills to look at a visual image and to draw a conclusion. I think that it is good for our children to be seen as distinct from our adults for the purpose of shaping them and helping them grow into what it means to be an adult. Part of that parental responsibility is that a parent claims authority. The sense that the parent determines for the youngster what is appropriate at the time, what the child is ready for, what the child is capable of doing at the moment. When my son was 4 and he wanted to take his bicycle out and ride it in the cul-de-sac, he needed to come in and ask permission first so that my wife or I could go out, make sure he had his helmet on, and we would watch him while he rode. When he became 6 or 7, he was able to get on his own bicycle, put his helmet on, and ride in the cul-de-sac without permission. But if he were to ask, "Can I get on my bicycle and ride to East Petersburg and visit a friend?" I would say, "No." And when you get as old as Dave Wanner down here, you can ride wherever you want in the world on your bicycle. But at that point, he's not ready for that moment. The sense of authority, of making those decisions for youngsters about what they're ready for and what they are not ready for. I think that authority needs to be held in tension with allowing room for curiosity among our children. And you can see the family patterns of exploring curiosity if you go to yard sales, especially where people still have children who are older now, because you will see the history of that child's curiosity laid out on the sales tables. If we were to have a yard sale, you would see, first of all of the Thomas Tank Engine stuff, because that was my son's first area of curiosity. And then you would see a collection of VeggieTale figures and VeggieTale videos and the Wiggles and Potty Time with Bear and that whole collection of DVDs and stuff that came along. We just gave them up, by the way, to our niece who's 1.5 years, so her curiosity is a new area. And then you would see the superhero figures come in, Superman and Batman and the videos that come with that. And then it was the Star Wars phase that he went through, all the Star Wars figures. And now it's into sports and baseball and that team called the Phillies in Philadelphia. But as he was curious to allow him to explore his curiosity in those areas, with the hope being that as the child gets older, the child will be able to stand on his or her own in the situations they find themselves and be able to handle what they face. I found myself, my wife and me, in a situation like that at a recent baseball game for my son. It was the opposing team's last at bat. My son's team was up 6-4. And all of a sudden we noticed that the coach put my son in to pitch. There was a lot of anxiety among his mother and father. My wife asked me, "Did you bring the duct tape to put over my mouth? Because I'm afraid I'm going to say something that's going to embarrass my son." But to see him out on the mound, knowing the pressure on him to win that game at that moment, and not being able to manipulate it, the trust that he was ready at that moment to do it, and he succeeded. I will never tell you the stories of when he fails because I don't want to make him look bad in front of you, but in this case, he succeeded, which is the move to maturity. For a mature person will allow every other person the freedom to speak, to express opinions, and to act without the need to diminish and control. There is still accountability for what people do and say, but too often we try to control people from having the freedom to speak and to be and to do. It's what parenting can create in children, but I think it's a skill that we hope that not only are expressed in parents, but in business managers and in supervisors and in teachers and pastors and presidents, the capacity for maturity. How is it that we can grow into that new understanding, that maturity as people? I don't think it's possible without the intervention and the work of the Holy Spirit. For some reason, this spring, a family of mallard ducks has decided to make their family in our cul-de-sac. And so, you know, we saw them waddling around for a while, and now all of a sudden there were 8 little ducklings that are following the mother duck around in our cul-de-sac. And there's no pond there, so I'm not sure why they are there. And it was this past Friday that as the rain started, they were enjoying splashing around in the water that lines the curb and enjoying just a little time to play in the water. But unfortunately, as the rain picked up, the water level went up and it washed all 8 ducklings down into the sewer. It was my neighbor who noticed on Saturday morning the mother duck frantically walking around the storm grate and then went out and heard the cry of all 8 ducklings echoing from the sewer below. That's when I came into the equation, because the doorbell rings at my house and I open the door and this young woman looks up at me and says, "We need a man." You know, it was when the angel Gabriel appears to Mary and says, "Greetings, favored one." She ponders what kind of greeting it was. I ponder, what kind of greeting is this? And she explained the situation. She says, "We want to lift the grate to see if the ducklings can come out, but we aren't strong enough. Can you help?" And so I went out, and with my neighbor, we lifted the grate and pulled it away. The problem was the hole was over 5 feet deep. And so the duck mother is standing there crying for the babies. The babies are inside crying, and there's still no way the babies could be reunited with their mother. That's when my neighbor climbed down in the sewer. And one by one, she picked up those ducklings and she handed them out of the hole and reunited them with their mother. That moment, when someone comes, the depth of where we are in our own personal struggles and being lost, and reaches out to us and lifts us up and reunites and reconciles us. And Jesus says, "I have come to be with you." And as I am lifted up, I will draw all people to me. His lifted up is the death on the cross, which is a descent to the lowest parts of humanity. And I will be with you and give you life. As Christ is with us, He is our living room. That as we live in Him, we have room to live. And it is that power at work in our lives that gives us the capacity to be the parents that God is calling us to be, and the grandparents, and the aunts and the uncles, and the business managers, and the presidents, and the supervisors, as we allow those around us to grow into the fullness of who they are. Amen.